Books on Tape presents The State of Jones, the small southern county that seceded from the Confederacy, by Sally Jenkins and John Stauffer, read by Don Leslie. I see a book kissed here, which I suppose to be the Bible, or at least the New Testament. That teaches me that all things whatsoever I would that men should do to me, I should do even so to them. It teaches me further to remember them that are in bonds as bound with them. I endeavored to act up to that instruction. I say, I am yet too young to understand that God is any respecter of persons. I believe that to have interfered as I have done in behalf of his despised poor was not wrong, but right. John Brown, last address to the Virginia Court, 1859. Prologue, The South's Strangest Soldier. 1921, border of Jones and Jasper Counties, Mississippi. The newspaper man drove his big city car along a rutted red clay country road, sending up garlands of Mississippi backwoods dust. Newton Knight was hard enough to find when he was living. Dead, he would always be a fugitive, the newspaper man supposed. The old Civil War guerrilla was said to be nearing 90 years of age, and it wouldn't be long before he escaped his worldly pursuers and went to the grave, and plunged straight to hell, his enemies hoped. But before he did, the newspaper man intended to take down his story with an honest pen. The chance to interview Knight was an irresistible summons to Meigs O. Frost, an Andover and Harvard-educated correspondent for the New Orleans Item. Frost, 38, was always on the lookout for a rich subject. He'd made a career out of exploring the queer angle, the surprising complication, and the buried secret. Newton Knight qualified on all of these counts. There wasn't a more controversial or reclusive Civil War figure in the South. He'd still be debated long after the last headstone of the oldest combatant was covered with moss, Frost guessed. Frost pressed the gas of his black Model T and endured the jouncing of his wheels, the rattling of the shutter hood, and laboring of the crankshaft. The rough road, littered with stones and pine boughs, wound through steep, wooded fields and across the crest of a lonesome, timber-covered ridge. At last, a clearing opened up. Frost braked to a stop with the sound of "Auga!" from the brass horn. He sat on the cape of a remote hill with a sentinel-like view of the surrounding ridges. It was a place that suggested guardedness rather than peace. Before him was a weather-beaten cabin, sheltered by lofty pines and crooked oaks, the sort the Confederate cavalry had hung traitors from. Frost got out of the car, and as the dust swirled around his cuffed pants and city shoes, he felt a stir of anticipation. He just might get the answers to some long-asked questions. Everyone had an opinion about the man whose loyalty to the Union had caused him to betray the South. But no one had ever heard the opinions of Newton Knight himself. Knight's role in Civil War Mississippi had been argued over ever since the surrender. The debate as to who he was and what he meant by his actions raged on in old letters in school-taught hands, overlooked depositions and wartime documents. Only one characteristic of the man did they all agree on. Just a fightin' fool when he got started, a friend described him. From 1863 to 1865, Knight, an anti-slavery farmer in Jones County, Mississippi, led an insurrection against the Confederacy. For 2 long years, he fought a war from within, successfully evading every bloodhound and tough-booted rebel that came after him. Working side by side with blacks and fellow fugitives, he raised the American flag in the marrow of the South, Confederate President Jefferson Davis's home state, and became such an effective opponent that in the last year of the war, exaggerated reports circulated that he and his compatriots seceded from the Confederacy and formed a separate government. The phrase, "the Free State of Jones," earned a storied, if apocryphal, place in Mississippi and in the American imagination. For all of that, Captain Newton Knight remained one of the less known and most poorly understood warriors of the Civil War. An expert in the art of disappearance, he had faded into the weeds of time, the way he once faded into the canebrake of the Mississippi Piney Woods region. Virtually every local account of him was bent by lore or bitter memory. Depending on who told the story, he was called a hero, outlaw, soldier, or murderer. I believe in giving the devil his due, Newt was a mighty sorry man, declared his old Confederate neighbor, Ben Graves. Yet, to one local boy named Monroe Johnson, Knight left the indelible impression of a patriot. He looked, Johnson said, like George Washington with his long white hair. Who was he, really? He was a slave owner's grandson who never owned slaves. A dead-eye shot who could reload a shotgun before the smoke cleared. A father and husband who, after the war, had two families, one white, the other black. A white man who, in his later years, was called a Negro. He fought for racial equality during the war and after, and he envisioned a world that would only begin to be implemented a century later. Those were the facts. The full story was even more complicated. That Newton Knight deserted and fought against the Confederate Army was well known. Less well known and seldom publicly acknowledged was Newton's long alliance with a woman named Rachel, a slave owned by his family, a woman of manifest strength and arresting appearance, whom he was rumored to have loved and even married. Rachel aided and protected Newton during the Civil War, and after it, bore his children. Newton shared his homestead with her until her death in 1889, and perhaps breaking the biggest taboo of all, he had acknowledged their children and grandchildren as his own. What he did after the war was worse than deserting, old Ben Graves said. The recovery of the life of this poor Mississippi farmer who fought for the Union was an important story, Frost believed. For one thing, Knight contradicted the romantic vision of the Southern past as a glorious lost cause. In this view, the Confederacy was a noble but failed attempt to declare independence from Northern aggressors, and slavery was ignored. One would never know, based on this lost cause mythology, that countless gallant Confederate heroes had committed treason in defense of a still deeper crime, or that the majority of white Southerners had opposed secession, that many Southern whites fought for the Union, and that a few of them, like Knight, burst free of racial barriers and forged bonds of alliance with blacks that were unmatched even by Northern abolitionists and remained loyal against all odds. Newton Knight was a spectacular reminder to Meg's Frost that the South was plagued by bloody internal estrangements. In fact, a major reason for the South's defeat stemmed from its enemies within, blacks and whites. In Jones County, 53 men had not only fought as anti-Confederate guerrillas, but formally enlisted in the Union Army in New Orleans. Definitive statements about Knight's career were perilous, given the scantiness of the record and the competing agendas of the witnesses. But this much Frost was sure of. For two long years, Knight and his band remained unconquered, though surrounded by Confederate armies from start to finish. Their resistance had hampered the Confederate Army's ability to do battle against the North, forced it to conduct a Third Front war at home, and eroded its fierce will to fight. Not that anyone had ever thanked him for it. Newton Knight remained such a sore subject that...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?